Thank you. Oh, my soul. I talked about talking more about our soul this year. I need to be more in contact with talking about our souls. Today, we're going to talk about Luke chapter 22. So please turn your Bibles there to Luke chapter 22, verses 39 through 52. I say that mostly for the people out there in the podcast world, because you guys get a look up here. Because, you know, Bill makes sure they're all up there, and he does a great job keeping up with me, so you don't have to deal with that. But the folks out there have to look at their own Bibles, okay? Before we start this, I need to remind you about what we're doing. We're looking at the Luke Acts sequel. Same author, same audience, a guy named Theophilus. That guy has something to do with Paul and his trial in Rome, because that's where the book of Acts ends abruptly, with Paul awaiting trial. So Luke is trying to tell him the things that he researched to give him the background about who Jesus was, who the people who were opposed to Jesus are. So it makes sense to him who this guy named Paul is and who has him waiting on trial in Rome. So we see some things that are different in Luke. And part of it has to do with the fact that Luke is a Western thinker. And some of the things that he leaves out, we don't miss at all, because we are Western thinkers too. And we are at the story of Jesus being arrested. We just recently talked about Jesus instituting the Lord's Supper. And that's important to remember, because there are some words that we say, the words I say, the words of institution, that I got wrong for a long, long time. I used to say, this is my body broken for you. I'm not sure where I picked that up, but somebody corrected me, and I looked at it, sure enough. Here's what the text says. Here's my body given for you. That is important to understand what we're going to read in the next couple weeks. That Jesus voluntarily laid down his life. He gave it. It wasn't a situation where some people took it. Matter of fact, we're going to see he goes out of his way to make it happen. He's going to give them words when he could have just been quiet. He's going to be quiet when he could have said something that would have stopped the whole thing. And in the garden, when he is arrested, he's going to make sure that that works out all right. So if you don't remember anything else, and we're going to talk about some interesting details that you might remember, but I want you to remember, this is what we need to get from this story. Jesus is the only one in charge here. He is going to make this happen on this Passover, in this situation. And despite the ineptitude of everybody else, he's going to make it happen. Because we needed it. He's going to give himself. So, with that in mind, let's go to Luke chapter 22 and read what Luke has to say about the situation in the garden. And remember that Luke did a lot of research, okay? He got a chance to talk to a lot of people. And we're going to think about who he got a chance to talk to about certain situations that happened here. Yes, Mark has this. Matthew has it. They have some stuff that Luke left out. Luke put some stuff in that they left out. And we'll get a chance to look at that. So we are in Luke chapter 22, and we are starting in verse 39. Jesus went out, as usual, to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. Luke's the only one put in there, as usual. Okay? Jesus has a pattern. This is where Jesus goes. We talked about that last week, okay? This is like his favorite KOA campground. He goes out there. We find out that he went out there in John for the Feast of the Tabernacles. This isn't the only time, not just the Feast of Passovers, but he has a place he likes to go on the Mount of Olives, and he goes there all the time. That's important because that's where Judas knows to find him, away from the crowds. Jesus knows this is going to happen. He could have changed his campground reservations and really messed Judas up, but he didn't do it. He went out, as usual, to the Mount of Olives. He could have stayed in town. He could have stayed in the upper room, right? But he didn't do that. He went out as usual, Mount of Olives. His disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray so that you will not fall into temptation." He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed. Luke's the only one that's got the stone's throw thing in there. Okay. Somebody he talked to, Peter, John, somebody, he asked, how far did Jesus go? Well, I don't know how far you can throw a stone. How big of a stone? We don't know. Not very technical. But he went further away from him. And it says here that he knelt down and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done." An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Okay. We're missing something here. Remember in Mark and Matthew, he came back three times and woke up the disciples and said, "Hey, did you fall asleep? Come on. Can't you just stay and watch?" And then he went away and prayed some more, and he came back and he woke them up again. And then he went away and prayed some more, and he came back and he woke them up again. It's okay, that's it. Here they are. Luke leaves that out. Did he not know that from his research? Well, I'm sure he did. But you know what? That's a very Jewish thing, the three times thing. Remember how many times Noah sent out something from the ark to find out? Yeah. Remember Elijah praying for the drought to end, and he sent his servant out to look for clouds? Yeah, that's a very Jewish thing. Didn't call to Luke, and it probably doesn't call to you. It probably doesn't sing to your heart. So he just left it out. But we do have the prayer, right? And it looks like in Luke he just went and prayed that once. Here's what we have in Luke that we don't have in another. An angel came and strengthened him. Now, if you look in your text, that's not in some of the early manuscripts, and I hope that doesn't shake you up, whether Luke actually put that in there or not, okay? Somebody put it in there later, but the early manuscripts didn't have that. But you know what the word angel means? The word angel means messenger. And Theophilus would know that because he speaks Greek, all right? So what he's saying is there was a message, something that strengthened him. And then the part about the blood, the sweat, the drops of blood, again, that's not in the original or the early text, but it's in here. And if that's ever caused you disconcerting, I don't know. What the picture you get is Jesus is in anguish, right? You get that? He's in anguish. Because he knows it's going to happen tonight if he makes it happen. If he makes it happen, it's completely up to him. Completely. How much hope are the disciples? Yeah. Not much. You know, we get down on them, but you know, what do you do after a big meal like Thanksgiving? You sleep, right? Doesn't matter what's on football, right? They didn't have turkey, but they had lamb. And these are people that don't get to eat meat all the time, right? It was a big feast. There was wine, there was lamb, and they were tired. But Luke gives them a break. He says this. He says in verse 45, when he rose from prayer and went back to his disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. Did you ever picture them being sorrowful? Yeah. Why would they be sorrowful? Did they really believe that this was going to happen to Jesus? Why were they sorrowful? Because Jesus was in anguish. Do you think that they picked up that Jesus was in anguish? Were they used to Jesus being in anguish? Was it affecting them in their lives? Yes. How did Luke know that? He talked to him. Can you imagine talking to one of those guys? What did it feel like? How far away did he go? I mean, what questions would you ask? But they understood Jesus' anguish, and they were depressed. They were depressed. Sorrow. They were exhausted from it. You know, a lot of people can feed off of somebody else's joy, strength, energy. You know, there's some people you're around that just, you feed off of it, right? There are some people that's all they do, and they suck the life out of everybody, right? But being with Jesus always gave them a chance to gain energy from his joy, his peace, his patience, his love, his kindness, his goodness, his gentleness, his faithfulness, his self-control. Now he's in anguish and they felt it. And Luke felt like he had to explain to Theophilus, that's why they were asleep. Interesting. Think about who actually told him that. He says, in verse 46, why are you sleeping? He asked them. Get up and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. Well, what's the temptation? Well, we're going to see it in just a second. While he was still speaking, a crowd came up, and a man who was called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus asked him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? Wow. You have to picture this, guys. You ever been someplace that's really dark? I mean, really dark, and you didn't have a flashlight? And you didn't have an app on your phone that turned it into a flashlight. And you didn't have headlights on your car. Right? Can you imagine what it was like trying to find Jesus on the Mount of Olives with a torch? Yeah. How far does light from a torch go? Well, you kind of get, you know, like a 10-foot area. Other than that, what's out there? Well, you don't know until you get that much closer. Can you imagine what the scene looked like? Is Jesus the only one camping out on the Mount of Olives? It's the Passover. This place is full of people. They're looking for a group of people. They're looking for a specific person. And they found the place because Judas led them there. And they found the people because Judas recognized them. But which one do they want? There's only one of them they want. So Judas has to identify that person with all the flickering torchlight, with all of the chaos of people waking up and trying to figure out what in the world is going on. And Judas tells him, I'm going to go and greet him. Hello, Rabbi. With a kiss. And that was not an unusual thing. You know, the kiss of peace, where you come, and they still do it a lot in Europe, where they kiss someone on both cheeks, you know. So we do the air kiss here. That's closest we get, right? I mean, this makes us feel uncomfortable, honest. I know, because I had friends that were just so literal in the way they translated the Bible, and they couldn't get the idea of this being, you know, the author's original intent to his original audience. And I say, okay, well, here over here in Romans chapter 16, you're supposed to greet each other with a holy kiss. How many of you do that? Oh, we translate that into the holy handshake. Okay. This was what you did there. And the fact is that Jesus allowed him to come all the way up and to try to kiss him. And he asked Judas, really? Really, with a kiss? Is this how you're going to betray me? And then things get really wild. Those who were supposed to fight the temptation, guess what happens? He says in verse 49, when Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they said, Lord, should we strike with our swords? How many did they have? Yeah. Remember, it was a surprise to Jesus? Yeah, that's enough. Okay. We got two swords, right? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. Okay. I don't know if you've thought much about this and what this must have looked like in the dark. Right? Somebody had a sword. We know later that's somebody's name. In the Gospel of John, when it was written after the destruction of Jerusalem, when Peter was already dead, John fingers Peter. This was Peter. This was Peter who got up and tried to cut somebody's head off. Think about it. How do you cut off somebody's ear? I mean, do you do the... Huh. Now, there's only one way to cut off somebody's ears. You swing at their head and they do this. Yeah. There's a guy that almost lost his head. Guess what? We know his name too. We didn't know it until John fingered him. Later in the Gospel of John, his name is Malchus. He's a servant of the high priest, right? Usually when somebody is named in the text like that, it means something. You know what it means? It usually means they became a believer. And the church that reads that would know who that person is. Oh, really? That's Malchus? That's Brother Malchus. We know him. I met him at a retreat. Yeah. Who did Luke get to ask about this? Was it Malchus? Because Luke puts in a detail that nobody else does. You know what that is? Malchus got his ear back. He says in verse 51, Jesus answered, no more of this. And he touched the man's ear and healed him. You know, if we didn't have Luke writing this, we would not know. We would oh yeah, Malchus, he's the guy with one ear. No, Luke tells us that Jesus took the time after rebuking Peter to heal that man's ear. In the midst of all of this chaos and people trying to grab Jesus, He healed this man, and he stopped this armed defense. Did he have to stop it? No. But that's not what he wanted. He wanted them to arrest him. He needed this to happen for you and for me. So he stopped it. And Peter's rusty sword, who knows where that thing ended up? Do you think Peter got a chance to carry it off? Because guess what Peter does? He runs. We found out from Mark. Mark was there, the gospel writer, Mark, as a young man. He was there, and he was wrapped in a linen cloth. And he runs, and they try to grab the linen cloth, and they get it. And he goes home naked. Yeah, Mark's the only one that puts that in his gospel, by the way. Yeah. I mean, this is chaos. People are running into the dark. And Jesus is standing there, healing a man's ear. Now, I need to tell you, the Romans hate riots. They hate armed groups. They hate insurrection. They totally, completely, thoroughly hate it, and they will stamp it out no matter where it is. And this is good to know, because when you get into the book of Acts, and we will, Lord willing, get into the book of Acts, and you've got Paul in Ephesus, and there is a bunch of people upset because Paul is messing up their business. They're not selling as many idols as they did before. And they start a mob and a riot. And the disciples do all they could to keep Paul out of going down there. And finally, one of the town leaders stands up and says, "What are you people, crazy? The Romans will come and take away all our privileges, all of our rights, if you keep rioting." And they stopped the riot. The Romans hate that stuff. Good to know. Jesus stopped it. Were any Romans here? No, not so far. But Theophilus needed to hear that. This thing had the potential to get out of hand and go crazy, and Jesus stopped it. And then he says to them, he says in verse 52, he says, "Then Jesus said to the chief priests, the officers of the temple guard, and the elders who came for him, 'Am I leading a rebellion that you have come with swords and clubs? Every day I was with you in the temple courts, and you did not lay a hand on me. But this is your hour when darkness reigns.'" Yeah. Jesus said, "Hey, you guys could have taken care of this anytime. But this is when you work. Dark, darkness, light, day, night, truth, lies, all of those analogies, all of those things you think about when you think of darkness, right?" And Jesus knew it was going to happen. But he was pointing out to them, "I'm not leading a rebellion, am I?" Yeah. Good for Theophilus to read. What do we take away from this? Well, we take away that Peter was passionate enough to try to cut off somebody's head. He was misled enough in his own thoughts about what Jesus wanted to do something that Jesus didn't agree with at all. And Jesus had to fix it, and he did. He fixed it. And because of that, the guy whose ear got cut off became a believer because of what Jesus did in the garden Because he could contrast what he saw and what we're going to see at the chief priest's house and these various trials. But there's one thing I want you to remember. You remember what it is? This is his body given for you. And Johnny says, I lay down my life, I can take it up again. Yeah. The only person in charge here, the only person who knows what they're doing is Jesus. So we can do this. So we can remember. So we can connect again to what he's done for us and all the rights and privileges, all the benefits, all the blessings, all the joy, all the happiness that comes from the being at peace with God because of what Jesus did. And so we do this. You may think we do it a lot. Well, if you don't remember what we're doing, it probably would sound like it. We do it a lot. But if you remember that the Word became flesh and lived for a while among us, and we beheld his glory, glory of the one and only Son, and that body he laid down for you and for I. We're going to ask the music team to come up and lead us again in the song to prepare our minds to take the Lord's Supper.